Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. From his campaign headquarters, I sit down with Cranston Mayor and Republican gubernatorial nominee, Alan Fung. Alan Fung has been the mayor of Cranston, Rhode Island for nearly a decade, and for the second time is the Republican nominee for governor of Rhode Island. I caught up with Mayor Fung in the days leading up to the general election, trying to focus on his own journey as a public servant and the key differences between himself and his two major opponents, incumbent governor, Democrat Gina Raimondo, and independent former Rhode Island representative and Trump campaign chair, Joe Trillo. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Bartholomew Town Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you consume content. You may also find each of our in-depth interviews with Rhode Island candidates and elected officials, media members, artists, and more at BartholomewTown.com or RIPodcast.com. Stay with the Bartholomew Town Podcast all the way through the general election and beyond. We've got you covered on all things Rhode Island politics. Check out our back catalog of interviews dating back to earlier this year before you hit the polls. All right, here we go. My conversation with Cranston Mayor and Republican gubernatorial nominee, Alan Fung. We are here at the campaign headquarters, 12 days out from the election. How are you feeling, Mayor Fung?
Feeling very good. You know, 12 days, we've been grinding it out, you know, just like Bill Belichick said, doing our job. So that we're going to get into position on November 6th and take this victory and bring the Super Bowl home.
We've seen polling numbers. We've seen, you know, statements by both Governor Raimondo and Joe Trillo that suggest, you know, for whatever reason, this race is heading in a direction that doesn't see you as the victor. But what's your response to all of that right now?
Obviously, it's come from both those camps because they cut a deal. I think all Rhode Islanders know it. You know, we heard it at the last debate. The governor didn't want him to drop out. You hear Mr. Trillo saying in his own words to the Providence Journal as well as talk radio, that his mission, even if he's got 2 points, is to defeat me. Obviously, that team is the one that wants to keep the status quo. I'm about change, reforming our state, bringing it back to Rhode Islanders. And that's what I've been about, you know, crisscrossing the state from Woonsocket, Cumberland, all the way down to Wesley, making sure that our message of reform is needed. Our leaders are failing us, particularly our governor. You know, we have so many people that have been hurt under DCYF care. We had another child death that happened that's been reported. We're up to 24 now, 13 seriously injured. That is unconscionable, and in this day and age, it has to stop. UHIP is still a disaster that was caused by the governor that's now upwards of $660 million, you know, with no end in sight. She causes problems, doesn't know how to fix it, and deflects from her mistakes.
Before we get into the specific issues, if you could just take some of the listeners out there who may not be entirely familiar with your backstory. Obviously, you've been the mayor of Cranston for about a decade. You were on the city council prior to that. But what's your story in general as far as were you born in Rhode Island?
I'm a native Rhode Islander, born and raised. My parents were first generation that came to this country from Hong Kong in search of a better life for the family they're about to start. You know, I'm privileged and fortunate to be here, as well as my two younger sisters. I ended up going through the school system, graduate of classical high school, local boy, Rhode Island College, and then on to Suffolk Law School. But one of the things that my parents instilled in me was the sense of hard work, and I realized what it takes to run a small family business. They were in a Chinese restaurant business for 35 years. I grew up in that business, bussing tables, washing dishes. I started 9 years old, couldn't see over the sink, had to stand on this little milk crate. And that's what I have kept in mind, those experiences, what taught me about, you know, what it is like to run a small family business. And as mayor for the past decade, I've never lost sight that government has to be customer focused. And in Cranston, we focus on our residents, most importantly, focus on our small business owners. You know, while it's been great that we have large companies like Taco, Alex and Ani, or even Cadence Medical Manufacturers, we also provide the same, if not more, attention to helping Geraldine Sewing Shop, you know, open her doors 9 years ago, to Marchetti's Restaurant or Cafe Eatery do their expansions. And if you see our change ad that we've been running for the past couple of weeks, those business owners, the faces of our new generation of business owners, what I've been so proud of, helping many of them, you know, opening up their business in Cranston, doing it the right way, by stabilizing our tax base, by cutting fees and, you know, cutting through the red tape, they've thrived. And that's what I want to do as governor, making sure we focus back government on them, customer service centric, because unfortunately, it's harder to do business now than it was when my parents first started their business, or even, you know, it's tougher now for the next generation of graduates to come back to Rhode Island. Like, I had that opportunity back in 95 when I finished with law school. I want to change that dynamic.
Yeah, there's no question about that. That was my experience. Graduated, moved away for a decade, and found my way back here. But that's a rarity amongst my peers that actually left Rhode Island. And it seems like such a great place to be geographically, in between Boston and New York. International flight accessibility, we've got obviously great topography, the beaches and everything, but for some reason it just doesn't click.
And that's our economy, and that's going to be my priority in job one when I take office as governor. You know, this governor has been so out of touch, and we've seen a lot of her policy decisions be made by based upon one deciding factor: money. Money from our out-of-state friends that have, you know, lined her campaign coffers, you know, lined the coffers of the Democratic Governors Association to, you know, support her reelection. And that's all she's been good at, because, you know, she's been an abject failure. Many departments of state government are on fire. Many people in Rhode Island have been hurt. You know, we mentioned DCYF and, you know, even sadly that additional death. But my family was also caught up in that UHIP benefit system. You know, the one time in my dad's life that he needed help from government, he had Parkinson's. We couldn't take care of him at home and had to put him in a nursing home. Applied for, you know, long-term care benefits. He lost his application not once, but twice. 7 months my family had to wait, wonder whether he was going to get his benefits or not. And that nursing home that he was in, they hadn't gotten paid. That is just wrong. You know, you're talking about you're impacting families, you're impacting employers, employers that have to pay their employees, employers that have to pay their vendors. We've seen, you know, a nursing home go out of business in Northern Rhode Island. We've seen home care agencies go out of business. That is not taking care of our own, taking care of businesses here. The governor loves to put forward a strategy of spending millions of dollars, you know, to try to attract the GEs or Johnson & Johnson in the world for a few limited jobs. Well, how about taking those millions and investing in tax cuts here to the small business owners? And that's my plan. Cutting our sales tax from that high 7% down to 5%, making sure we lower our fees with my low fee guarantee, ensuring that many of the business fees that we pay, professional fees that we pay, are the lowest in New England, and cutting through the red tape so that the next generation of business owners can have that opportunity, have a place to land in Rhode Island with government as a partner by their side, helping them in their business plan, helping them find capital. And if they can open up their doors, well then, you know, let's waive the fees and taxes for that first year to send a message to them: we're a partner with you.
And this sort of, regarding the sales tax and these, the implementation of these programs, that would be a gradual phase in, so as to make it possible, so to speak.
Well, I prefer to call it phase down.
Phase down, sure, yeah.
You know, from that high 7% at a 0.5% a year over the course of the 4 years of my administration, first administration, and we're going to support it by cuts. You know, cuts to this governor's reckless spending that we've seen has been ongoing for 4 years now. Our state's budget has grown by $1 billion under this administration, and yet every forum that we've been in, we keep hearing the same complaints, same issues, same things that, you know, were brought to my attention, her attention 4 years ago. We're not better off for it. In fact, I argue we're worse off for it. And that's why we deserve better. We need a change, and I'm going to bring that change from day one to bring government back to be responsible for Rhode Islanders.
How much of the change or your that you would bring or the differences that you have with the governor would you say at this point in the second go-around are more based on a managerial style versus outright political differences? There seems to be some overlap in your political philosophies. Obviously, there are differences as well, of course, but how much of it would be a change of managerial approach more than anything?
I think the biggest difference between myself and the governor is I'm competent and she's not. I've got a record of results in the nearly 10 years I've been mayor of our state's now second largest city, where we've grown, overtaken Warwick as the second largest city. People want to live there, work there, and play there and enjoy a nice night out. Unlike what the governor is doing, she's created an atmosphere of, every single department's on fire. I mentioned two with DHS, DCYF, but even morale is low at state police. We're seeing, at Department of Transportation, failures in how she rolls out, traffic, her traffic program and road paving schedule. We saw that with Gina Jam on 195. This has to stop because, we're impacted as Rhode Islanders by daily decisions that she's made. I saw many individuals, caught on 195, 3 hours to get from the Massachusetts line to Providence on a weekend. And that is failure because she is totally incompetent and her decisions are motivated by one thing, her political allies and friends who she's taken care of, and that started from day one and continues, and who lines her campaign coffers.
Right, and of course that project was pulled after what you described as Gina Jam, after that Sunday night. You wonder if that same project will resurface after the election if she somehow is reelected.
And it has to resurface. But here's the problem, though. She delays all of this until after the election. If she had properly coordinated and planned, like I would have done, you would have known that, one of the outlets that you're diverting a lot of the traffic had already existing road project going on in Providence. You wouldn't have maybe closed off some of those other, bridgeways and traffic ways in East Providence in order to, get this coordinated properly in a proper traffic flow. All you heard from the governor, well, I'm not an engineer. Well, neither am I. But I listen to competent people who've done it, not being arrogant like she has and saying, we're going to get this done. And that's what's led to disaster after disaster, some funny, some leading to tragic situations. From Cullen One, we all laughed at. When we're talking about another child dying, that's serious business, and that's not what this government is supposed to be about.
Let's shift to your other opponent in this race, which has become, at some levels anyway, a three-way race. Joe Trillo really surfaced as a candidate this winter. I interviewed him in February. It seemed like his operation was already in place, or maybe it was March that we spoke. And the one thing that stuck out about my interview with Mr. Trillo was his disdain for you, calling you all sorts of names, and that was, in many ways, the focus of his interview. What is this, and why does Joe Trillo have it after you like this, seemingly?
I think it's on the minds of all Rhode Islanders, and I think all Rhode Islanders know that he's cut a deal with the governor. And, this whole campaign has just been about against me. He admitted it to the Providence Journal. And for whatever reason, whatever deal that he's cut, it's wrong. And they want to stop change and progress that I will bring up to our state house and the competency that I will bring under a Fung administration to every single department and state agency that services our public. Mr. Trillo can keep saying what he wants, but I think Rhode Islanders know that a vote for him is nothing more than a vote for Gina Raimondo.
And with Ted Seidel, there's just been this back and forth around the around pension reform. Joe Trillo saying that you've taken some of his ideas and so forth. It's on, Mr. Seidel's endorsement of you, was spun by Mr. Trillo as actually not having taken place. So where does this go from here? How can you communicate beyond this?
I think Mr. Trillo has a hearing problem and a visual problem too, because unlike him, Mr. Seidel was standing right next to me and said, "I endorse Alan Fung," because he understands the pension problem, because he knows what's right, because he really is willing to tackle this problem and do a true forensic investigation of that pension fund. That pension fund that the governor has used to just pad the coffers of her Wall Street friends. You know, $500 million in losses, fees that have gone to her friends. And what do you think she's getting a lot of her out-of-state money from? New York, Wall Street. You know, all these individuals are making it way to thank her by contributing and making sure that she's reelected governor, and that's what she's been about. You know, Mr. Trillo, you know, is in it just as a spoiler. We all know it, and a vote for him is going to lead to 4 more years of Governor Raimondo's incompetence.
With respect to the Speaker of the House, you obviously share a hometown have done so for a while. I'm sure you have a relationship with him. Do you feel as governor you'd be able to work with the General Assembly in a more improved and functional way than we've seen these past 4 years?
You know, I've always worked cooperatively across party lines to get a lot of the things done. You know, and in Cranston, it was no different. You know, when I first started, I was a 9-0 Democratic council. You know, we're fortunate now for the first time in 20-plus years, we have a Republican majority on the city council. However, you know, whether you're Democrat, Republican, when you govern for all, and that's been my style. But with that being said, if you have a legislature that's so overwhelmingly Democratic that's not willing to go along with many of the plans that I'm going to lay out to make cuts, to make dramatic reforms, to help our residents and put the dollars back to them on the front lines, then I will call them out. I'll use the press. I'll hold town hall meetings just like what I did in Cranston and let the residents know what truly is going on and that I need their help to really take back government for them.
One of your recent ads highlights that crime is up, and we've seen some statistics suggesting crime is down in Providence. Crime is up statewide. New England, Rhode Island stands out as a place with higher criminal activity than other states. What would you do to combat that, and would it be purely on a policing level, or do you see a grassroots way to construct better relationships between communities and police and communities and other institutions?
You know, I'm a very big proponent of community policing, and I would allow our police officers, you know, the freedoms to do their jobs. And that's not happening in some communities because of this sanctuary city designation. You know, in fact, our Cranston Police Department just yesterday, you know, caught an individual who was previously deported and re-entered into our country illegally and was committing, you know, additional crimes. And those individuals who are criminals, who we've detained, who are here illegally, they've got to go. It's a safety factor. And, you know, I'm proud of our police department, what they did. But even before that, you have this governor, because of what she's allowing the state to become, a sanctuary state, allow a dangerous individual like Mr. De Los Santos, who is now, after he served his prison sentence, and he's here illegally, should have been gone from out of this country. ICE should have been notified, and he should have been out there the day of his release. But that didn't happen. What happened? Released back in the community, and we caught him contributing to our opioid crisis because he was dealing drugs, and he was a high-level drug dealer. This is what's got to stop. And that ad called it like it is. You know, the policies that our governor subscribed to, the policies that some of our community leaders subscribe to is wrong. Cranston has never been a sanctuary city. We believe in proactive police enforcement, and that's how we created such a safe environment. And this has to happen for Rhode Island as well. But outside of law enforcement, we have to invest dollars in our kids, in a lot of programs after school. Make sure that there are programs there so they're not just, you know, hanging around or, you know, causing trouble. This is where the dollars really need to go.
And so that would be through private organizations, nonprofits, or city-funded programs?
A combination of everything. Combination of, you know, private organizations, you know, local municipality fundings, and even whatever we can do as a state to leverage some of our dollars for, you know, proactive programs. One of the things that I have seen work effectively in Cranston, summer learning. And also after-school dollar programs. And if we can leverage some of our state dollars with local dollars, continue a lot of that, have the kids, you know, be part of fun activities, but not realize that they're also learning, you know, during that time frame and keeping their mind active, that's what we should be encouraging.
What would your message be to first-generation families of immigrants who may be uncertain about immigration policy shifting to the right in the state? You know, your message here is that you're speaking to deporting criminals, you know, people
yes.
who have been convicted of a crime and who are entered illegally. But generally speaking, you wouldn't classify yourself as a hardline anti-immigration person.
I don't know. When you take a look at you know, what a sanctuary, the designation of sanctuary city or sanctuary state is, I am not having our law enforcement officers, whether it's Cranston Police or even the state police when I'm governor, you know, partnering with ICE and going out and conducting raids. That's not what we're talking about at all. We're not trying to create a culture of fear. But if people that are here that are criminals, that are committing crimes in our detention, they gotta go. But on the big picture immigration issue, you know, I am a son of immigrants that came here legally, but there has to be a process that's in place, and we will always be a welcoming state for any immigrant that's coming through that process, you know, legally, whether it's through you know, a normal green card process, where they're here, you know, seeking asylum. We will be welcoming to those that are going through the process legally. However, for, you know, like I said, those that are criminals, that's a different story. And criminals who are here illegally, they got to go back.
Last year here, when I moved back to Rhode Island and I started to kind of re-enter Rhode Island politics as a viewer, I watched your concession speech from 2014. I've watched it a few times since then. I really feel like it exposed your enormous desire to be governor and belief that you're the best person for that, and a soulful side of your persona, if you will. Do you feel like you've been able to connect with voters at that same level right there, in that moment of vulnerability almost, where that occurred in that speech?
Even more so. And if you remember watching that speech, I was hopeful for our state because I love this state. It's meant so much to myself, my family, that I wanted, you know, our current governor to succeed because I want our state to succeed. But after seeing the last 4 years of the disastrous results, the increase in our budget with reckless spending, and I'm not just using the term reckless spending, you know, just to throw a stone, but when you spend $675,000 on lights to light up the state house, that's crazy. And this is what we have to get, you know, back in balance. And, you know, as I've been going from, you know, different parts of the state, different communities, my message is resonating because people know that this governor doesn't have their best interests. They see that I care, you know, and you know, swinging back to 14, I did stop people from booing when we lost, you know, because I was heartfelt. I cared about the state. But now that this governor has had 4 years, we've had enough. I care about it too much. That's why I'm doing this again. I want to put the same effort that I put into turning Cranston around from that, you know, days of when it was in the red to where it is, one of the best places to live in America. I feel the same passion for helping our state, turning these, you know, continued conversations about out-year deficits into a state that we can all be proud of, that we all want to live in. Most importantly, have the next generation be a continuing part of it.
Is there a place or an event that you've traveled this go-around that you didn't know about in Rhode Island that blew your mind?
I've hit, you know, last time we hit every single city and town across the state, and that's the same this time.
Even out to Block Island?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would not miss that for the world, just to enjoy the beauty and even that ferry ride over. But this is what is so special. Each time that I've crisscrossed the state, you know, you find this little special nugget or jewel or even new restaurant or new ice cream shop. I'm a sweets guy. That's part of my problem is, you know, I'll pass on dinner for ice cream or brownies or anything chocolatey. But, you know, that's what I love because in that 4 years, I've seen, you know, a lot, learned a lot about our state, but also heard a lot about a lot of these small family businesses that are still strong, still feeling left behind, and want someone with my message to help them through these tough times.
Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, the Republican gubernatorial nominee. Any last words for this will air tomorrow, so people have about a week to get their act together and go vote if they haven't already planned it out.
You know, I would love to have their vote on November 6th. You know, this is a very important election. You know, we can continue going down the same disastrous route of our governor with a failed track record, and, you know, a lot of it is still being hidden. There's going to be a lot more that we're going to be uncovering in the next 12 days. And, you know, Rhode Islanders are going to continue to see that she doesn't care about us. We need a change, and the only way to bring about that effective change is a vote for myself, not any third-party candidate, and certainly not for the governor. I want to bring the state back to, you know, the place that my parents chose, that I chose to call home, so that the next generation can do the same.
And so for the pundits out there who have already called this race likely Democratic or whatever it is, the national pundits, the local ones, you say in the next 12 days we'll be seeing things that will move this race in some way?
Yeah, those national pundits don't know Rhode Islanders. They don't know our values. They don't know who we are. They don't know the fact that we're so parochial that, you know, a lot of times we keep stuff close to our vest. And a lot of those polls have been wrong on the national landscape, on the local landscape. I'm going to prove them wrong because, you know what, no one's ever had to give me anything in my life. I've fought through everything from schooling to where I've had to, you know, go to reach this great pinnacle that I'm so prideful of, you know, sitting as the first, you know, Asian American mayor in the state's history. I want to do more. I'm going to shock the world, shock Rhode Island, shock those national pundits who just want to play their continued same safeguard because I care, and that's what Rhode Island's about. You know, it's about the little guy. We're the smallest state with the biggest heart. I'm the littlest guy in this race, and I have a big heart to care for Rhode Islanders and bring back government to serve them.
As always, thank you for listening to the Bartholomew Town Podcast. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.